This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast.
We want to hear from you.
It's time for our listener survey. So head to the Joy website and let us know what you love about the station and your presenters.
Maybe you'd like to share your thoughts on Joy's program production team, the volunteers behind Joy podcasts.
The results of this survey will assist us in continuing to be the best possible station we can be.
Head to joy.org.au and have your say. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
Good evening and welcome to The Informer. Dean Beck with you tonight on a day where Joy 94.9 finds itself making the news. We'll be speaking with Joy's CEO, Tennille Moisel, and President, Jed Gilbert, to just find out the reaction from the threats made against this station. And later in the program, we'll be joined by Dr. Lauren Rose Warne from the Melbourne University School of Social and Political Sciences. Last night here at Joy 94.9, we were shocked to receive a bomb threat. Sometime around 7 p.m, there was an email which meant this station went into shutdown. It has been reported widely today throughout mainstream news, so it's probably best that Joy 94.9 do some of its own coverage of its own issues. It's not normal that we make the news, CEO Tennille Moisel.
No, it isn't, is it?
No. Not like this anyway.
No, certainly. Certainly not something that we'd like to make the news for.
We're also joined by Jed Gilbert, president of Joy 94.9. Is this something, Jed, that you think we should be more mindful of as the discussions around marriage equality come to the fore?
Yeah, look, it seems, I know Tennille has been making some comments today, it really does seem that it's allowing people some authorization or letting people think that it's okay to do some of this stuff. So, you know, whether it's specifically linked, you know, who knows, but we know that it's a very unusual situation for Joy to receive such a threat. You know, we're generally loved by the community, and to get this kind of threat and have to take this kind of action was really deeply disturbing. And yeah, it's just very unfortunate. It's not it's not really the conversation that we would want to be having today.
At the time, there were some 30 people in the floor here at Joy. There was a training session going on. Some of those people, it's their sort of first time at Joy. It's their introduction to Joy. They're doing their training. They want to become a part of this station. Not a nice welcome to them, Tennille.
No, I think it's one of those sort of weird dichotomies in that it isn't a nice welcome. It's certainly not the way we'd like people to be inducted, into Joy. But at the same time, it kind of amplifies or exemplifies the reason that Joy exists. And we have existed for 23 years to be that platform for the community, to be that connector for the community. And people are coming here and joining as members and wanting to become volunteers because they're wanting to have a sense of community and a sense of connection. So it absolutely isn't how we would like people to come and spend time with us, but at the same time it is the reason that we exist in the first place. So
yeah, I guess it's one of those things that unites us as volunteers. It solidifies part of the reason why we're here, but it also, you know, scares up us.
It has the potential to do that. And I think that what we need to remember is that the ability for us to come together and to support each other, that's what makes us a community. And I'm not saying that this is in any way an act that we want to see repeated, because we don't. But at the same time, there is strength. There are 325 of us here volunteering and working here at Joy. There is a strength in that community coming together, and we're all here for each other. And we've spent today, our volunteer coordinator has made contact or is making contact with everybody who was in the building to make sure that they are okay and to let them know that we do have that support in place. We've had Vic Police here today talking about additional services that we have access to in terms of promoting safety not only in an organisation or business context, but also as a personal safety context. And we're looking at ways that we can actually get some of that training out to our people, and not just here at Joy, but any of the community organisations as well.
Jed, there are processes that take place automatically when something like this happens. We have a front desk that's manned most of the time, and they are really quite often the front line for a lot of the negativity that might be directed our way. As presenters and volunteers on air, we fortunately don't get to see a lot of it because that front line edit it before we get to it. What procedures are we employing, or do we have, to ensure that that front line remains solid and looked after?
Yeah, look, we reviewed and updated our emergency response plan after the tragic events in Orlando in June, I think. And we wanted to make sure that the security arrangements here were as tight as we possibly could. Now, of course, we're an inclusive organisation. We have, you know, lots of people coming and going, but we wanted to make sure that the support for our volunteers was as strong as it could be, and that people knew what to do if that situation arose. And it sounds like last night, you know, volunteers had to evacuate, and there was also a volunteer who had to manage that evacuation and did a stellar job making sure that making sure people were out of the building, making sure that people dispersed once they were down on the street, making sure that the record of who signs in and who doesn't was taken down. So, you know, these are critical things that we need to think through in a process sense. And I believe our risk committee will be looking at what's happened. And it seems to have gone very well according to our plan, but there's always room for improvement.
There are occasions when we get the odd false fire alarm too, which is a little bit of a rehearsal from time to time. Tennille, is there any connection, do you think, to the program that was airing at the time? It was a program that explored gender fluidity. Would that have been enough, do you think, to spark something like this, a reaction like this?
I can actually say that based on the contents of the threat, that there wasn't any connection with that show, which is fantastic. It was more of a general threat,
right?
Definitely towards the community, but yeah, no. I think we need to be clear that it wasn't about that show.
Sure, sure. No, I brought that up deliberately to clarify that. Because there are, you know, there are all sorts of machinations for motivations, and it's important to highlight that.
And Dean, I think the point that we really want to make is, I mean, we didn't want to be talking about this today, to be honest. It was forced upon us this morning, and hence we released the public statement. And it really just highlights how divisive the conversation, the public conversation, has become, and it really highlights how unnecessary it is for us to go through this. Now, you might not have noticed, you know, some people might not have noticed, but Joy has been pretty neutral, actually, through the marriage equality debate, the plebiscite debate. Joy always takes the viewpoint that we are providing a platform for lots of people to express diverse views, and there are people in our community, as you well know, who think that marriage equality is not the thing that we should be focusing on. And so Joy has always tried to maintain some neutrality to allow all of those diverse views to occur. But I think what has happened last night and today for us is that it shows just how divisive and hurtful the public conversation has become, and the authorization it's giving to people to be hateful.
We're speaking with Joy 94.9's President Jed Gilbert and CEO Tennille Moisel. Tennille, ironically, I watched a BBC documentary on the Orlando shootings last night. So the connection between the two was probably overly profound to me when I woke up and discovered what was going on today. Should we be more careful as we head towards this conversation, I guess, that's going to take place within the community? Do we need to have security 24 hours? What do you think needs to happen for us as an organisation?
I think what we've shown is that we have good processes in place. We'll continue to review those and update those. And as Jed said, our risk committee will actually come through and perform another audit. That needs to become part of our day-to-day business. I think what we need to remember is this is actually a time for connection. It has been a time for connection. I mean, we've been fighting for equality since the dawn of time, really. This is the biggest debate that we've kind of seen in the public space, and it's going to potentially drive the biggest adverse reaction to our community. It's important for our community to support each other, that we have our networks. And when I say our community, I do vehemently include our allies in that. And we've had some fantastic messages come through today, which has been amazing. We've had some donations come through on the back of this, which is
it's not the way to do a radiothon.
No, it is not radiothon. But there's a lot of support there, and that's what we need right now, is to remember that we exist because we started to exist 23 years ago to connect people, and we can't take that for granted. So it's very, very important that we make sure that if you're involved with Joy, that you're checking in on other people who work here, and if you're from the general community, that we're checking in on each other. I think that safety is always a concern, but at the same time, I know Jed's been saying this a lot today as well, you know, love will win, and we're not going to sort of back down on that. I mean, tonight for me is date night. Date night will not be disrupted for anything. And I think that's really important, that we're mindful, but at the same time that we're continuing to express ourselves and live our lives.
Jed, there's been an outpouring of support for the station on social media platforms. Have we experienced any negativity in that space?
Look, I think there have been one or two negative comments, but overall there have been hundreds of messages of support. And I think our community can take solace in the fact that the vast majority of Australians, are with us, stand with us in this change. And they're not going to accept this kind of attack on really what is the Australian way of life. This is freedom of expression we're talking about. They're not going to stand by and let hateful bigots be able to do this. So, I think whoever this individual was, their intention has failed. In fact, it has increased our resolve. It has increased our strength as a community. And we've received messages of support from other community organisations as well.
Far more for a Wednesday afternoon than normal.
Yes, yes.
What do we expect now from the police? Is there a report, Neil? What happens?
We will continue to work with them and they obviously do everything they can to identify who this person is, but it's email.
Yeah,
It's anonymous for a reason. So, but they have been absolutely amazing in providing additional support outside of just investigating that case. And we're incredibly lucky that we are actually in Victoria, and we've got such an amazing team of public servants who really do understand exactly who we are, what we're trying to do, and very supportive of it.
Yeah. Tennille Moisel, Jed Gilbert, thank you very much for joining us on
The
Informer.
Dan.
We are joined now by Dr. Lauren Rose Warne from the Melbourne University School of Social and Political Sciences. Lauren, not a nice time for Joy to have to experience something like this. I guess from your point of view as observing media, what do you think we can expect as we continue this debate around same-sex marriage equality? And is this the sort of thing that is normal?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dean. I think this is something that we've seen in Australia and in the United States over recent months, where legitimacy is being given to voices that have been previously silenced in our community due to the fact that they were seen to be abhorrent. You know, calling out, for example, people who are expressing racist or homophobic views. That wasn't the norm. It's becoming the norm once again, though, or at least becoming legitimised under the aegis of a debate on a plebiscite. It's giving legitimacy to airing views about restricting the rights and freedoms of non-heterosexuals. And I think this is a really, really dangerous time, because suddenly views that were considered fringe and dangerous are now being heard in the mainstream. That's a concern.
It seems really odd that something as simple as the celebration of love could motivate someone to do something as potentially damaging as making a bomb threat, or if you want to extend that out, the Orlando massacre.
Yeah, and this idea of the fact that we look at it, as a symbol of, and as a testimony to love, But the attacks on the community has been evidence of a hatred that's existing in society. Now, whether that hatred is for progressive views, whether that hatred is for non-heterosexuals, whether that hatred is for any minority or marginalised group in society, nonetheless, it's shown us that we've been a little bit tricked into thinking that our society is naturally going to become better and more progressive over time. That's not universally true. This situation in Australia and the US at the present is a reminder that we need to keep vigilant and that there's a lot more work for all of us to do.
The social media landscape has always been fraught. There's always been pluses and minuses for virtual conversations. What do we have to be mindful of in this space? I've got to say, I've seen some of the tweets in support of Joy since this news broke, and it's been really an outpouring of love towards the station and its people, and that's, I guess, social media at its best.
Absolutely. And from my investigations, yeah, most of the social media activity is expressions of love and support and commiserations that things have got to this stage. But as is the case with social media, there is a fringe element of keyboard warriors who are, you know, leaking with bravado behind the keyboard, but would very rarely actually do anything with their bluster. And I think that's something that's sort of the darker side of social media, where you get a platform for people with fringe views to express them in a public forum without really many deterrents because of that anonymity factor.
You've written extensively, in fact, you've published a book about cyberbullying. What sort of precedent is there for the type of threat that Joy received? And, you know, what sort of implementations can we put into place to make sure that we are protected from some of this crap?
Yeah, so ask any celebrity, for example, or anyone who's actually done any writing in the public sphere, myself included, and it is, we will all have stories to tell you about receiving threats either by social media or via email. Now, they can range from rape threats, death threats, you know, I hope you die, wishes of ill will to come to, or misadventure to come to us. This is a common experience for all of us, and I think this is a darker side of the technology. Police are aware of it, but legislation is always really slow to catch up to technology. And also, as Jeb mentioned, Antoniel mentioned this as well, that there is a difficulty when it's with email because there is the anonymity factor, and it's also very, very difficult, not impossible, but difficult to track where did the email come from, even if we can find the computer. If it's in a public area or if they were using public Wi-Fi, it's actually really difficult to track down an individual, even more so if they used a public domain like Gmail or Hotmail account as well. That adds another layer of complexity.
Should we be concerned? I mean, I guess with all of these threats, when do you take them seriously?
You always take them seriously, and I think that's the sort of what we're seeing in the United States after the New York and New Jersey bombings over the weekend. You know, there's talk about, you know, the perpetrator's father calling the FBI a couple of years ago, and the system is that the FBI cannot act on every threat, but they have to take every threat seriously. Mm. That doesn't mean watching everybody. It means being mindful and vigilant. And I think the best, although saddest, outcome of the threat is a reminder that there are people in our society, notably in Victoria, who are harbouring not only negative but violent attitudes towards this community, and that is something we need to keep on top of.
What do you mean by notably in Victoria?
Well, in the sense that Joya Sands, yeah, for example, right, was right, targeted, it's presumably from within the state. You know, I might be wrong there, but my guess would be that it would be within the state. And I think, therefore, there's just a need to think that we're not immune. And I think those of us, allies, non-heterosexual people in the community themselves, have created a nice cocoon around themselves of people who are supportive. It's often really jarring for us to find that this isn't universal and that there are people who have views markedly different to us. And I think this is an opportunity for us to just be reminded we all exist and all of our work is being done for a reason, and that there are enemies. And I hate making this a good versus evil debate, but nonetheless, there are people who are detracting from progress and equality, and that that's something we just need to keep on top of.
Joy 94.9 is Australia's largest member-based LGBTI organisation, and we are a media organisation as well. Does that make us an easy target?
It makes you a visible target, and I think that's the thing to think about as well, is, yeah, it could be easily just, you know, Googling gay media in Australia and getting the website and therefore thinking, oh, well, I'll just send off a threat. It could also be something more targeted. We don't know, we don't have the information because there's no one in custody who we can talk to. I think, though, it's just all organisations who are doing work in this space at the moment, I think, have a heightened need to be aware that there are detractors, and that not all of those detractors will just go on, you know, AM talk back and spout their nonsense, but actually might, on occasions, do something such as a bomb threat. And it's just that we need to keep our safety plans up to date and just have in mind this is a worst-case scenario, but we're on top of it.
We've spoken extensively on this station about some of the mental health implications that a public discourse around the plebiscite would eventuate. But this certainly wasn't something that was at the forefront of my mind. Should we be more, I guess, aware of this and other things that potentially could come our way?
Look, we started this discussion by talking about cyberbullying, and I think in terms of bullying as a whole, I've always had the approach that the state not allowing same-sex marriage, from my perspective, is state-sanctioned bullying. It's the state allowing different rights to be exerted for some people and not others. I think the plebiscite gives not only greater legitimacy to that, but validates the views that there's some sort of contest here, that there's a debate to be had. That's not the trend around the world. Why Australia wants to get in bed with countries who maintain really, really archaic views on this is extraordinary. It's hard to imagine that there are countries, you know, predominantly Catholic countries around the world, who have made the move towards same-sex and marriage equality, yet Australia somehow wants to act as though that there's still debate. I think the other aspect of mental health here is much the same as terrorism more broadly, is the, and I think you can consider a bomb threat as an act of terrorism because it's politically motivated, that the idea of people living in a state of fear. Now, that fear could be acute, or it could be simply the thought that crosses your mind when you enter the Joy FM premises in Bourke Street that maybe there's something to be fearful about. That small niggling feeling is how terrorists work. They trained our harmony and the perception that Joy is actually a really supportive and fun place to be, which of course it will remain, but nonetheless tinges it with that element of fear and vulnerability. And that's how terrorists win. That's what they're trying to do. It's not about body count. It's about changing people's perception of safety.
It's a horrible space to be in.
It's hideous, but this is, and it's not just, I mean, Joy FM's now feeling it at the moment, but this is exactly why when we're taking our shoes off at the airport, how the terrorists have won, because every single one of us who enters an airport now cannot be, have not had the idea of vulnerability cross our mind.
Every time we get one of those bomb scanners go over us as we've gone through the x-ray, you know, it reminds us that the potential is there, doesn't it?
The world is different, and that there are people who actively hate. And I think that's what's most jarring. A friend recently said to me about the New York and New Jersey, oh, but no one got killed. I said, it's not about body count anymore. It's about creating a permanent sense of fear and vulnerability in communities. And I think this is exactly what the effort was last night. It wasn't about trying to blow up the building. It was about making the people inside feel you could be attacked at any time.
Dr. Lauren Rose Warne, your insights are always most valuable. Thank you very much for joining us on The Informer.
I appreciate talking, just not so much on this topic.
I appreciate that.
Thanks, Dean.
Dr. Lauren Rose Warne is from Melbourne University's School of Social and Political Sciences. I'd like to read out to you just a couple of the messages that have been coming through on social media. Kirsty Miller said, "Stay strong, you legends of LGBTIQ airwaves, sending all Joy 94.9 staff and volunteers my love." From MP Terry Butler, "Thinking of you, Joy 94.9, everyone deserves to feel safe at work." from Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. Thank you, Joy, for all that you do and all that you are. And from the former editor of Star Observer newspaper, Ilias Jarshan, now living in London. Strength and solidarity to you all. Your work for the community and the safe space you provide is invaluable. So thank you very much to all of those who have been giving us their support and sending their love. We do appreciate it. We do read them all, and it helps keeps us going at this troubling time. We will continue to remain strong. We will continue to remain on air, and we will continue to keep you informed here on The Informer. You'll find a podcast of today's interviews available for download from Joy's website, joy.org.au/The Informer. You can follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy. You can follow me on Twitter at Dean Beck on Air. But until next time, keep well, take care, and bye for now.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.